Hello, Tiffany Almond. I am Stanley Hudson, and I do not think that is funny.
Hello, Micah Sargent. I enjoy the tangy zip of Miracle Whip.
You know, that's a pretty good accent. What I'm having trouble with here is that, look, now listen to me. I'm like a Savannah gentleman, and Stanley's not a Savannah gentleman. He just has kind of a deep voice and talks pretty slow.
It's like molasses dripping out of your mouth.
We are discussing season 2, episode 20. It's drug testing. It's Dwight in a uniform. It's Jim being quiet. It's Michael going to see Alicia Keys in concert.
Being paranoid and holding conference room meetings.
Being paranoid, holding conference room meetings. It's Creed identifying marijuana strains by their photos. It is a great episode.
This is a great episode. It's a really densely funny, wonderful episode, and it all connects so well. It's so funny. Mm-hmm. We have peak Dwight, which is always one of my favorite episodes ever. When we have Pete
Dwight is leading the episode, and he's mm-hmm. doing such a good job of it.
We have a cold open that connects very closely to the episode. Like it's almost like it's a little intro to the episode, which is different for their cold opens, because usually the cold open is kind of a clip from another day, and then we get into the episode. But this time it is a precursor to the rest of the episode, and it all happens on the same day. And then we have Jim explaining kind of a little synopsis of what went down.
Yes.
And so there's just so many things that happen in this episode that I forget are in this episode, because they're such iconic office moments, bits, scenes, whatever you want to call them. They are part of what everyone loves about The Office, and they're all here.
They're all here. This episode, I think, is, I don't know, like, it's as if they came up with so much good stuff that there was no reason to sort of do a cold open. Cause like there's only so much time, obviously, that you can pack into an episode. And the way that this whole thing is acted, the way it's written, it all just fits, like you said, sort of puzzle piece together. And they densely populated it, if you will, with such good stuff that there was not really any room to do anything else. And I love that, because so we go around like Dwight bouncing around to talk to everybody and try and figure out where this joint that's in the parking lot came from. And
half of a joint.
Yeah, half of a joint.
Not even a full joint.
And he's trying to figure out, like, or rather, there, it shows all of these different characters and how they react to these kinds of situations. Mm-hmm. And you get the impression of who these people are. And you start to get some, I think, insights on folks as well. A little bit more about, like, how Angela kind of has, like, a wild streak. And you wouldn't expect that on the face of it. And Oscar,
she was basically like, wear that uniform later.
Yes, wear that uniform. And, like, loving when he was shouting at her, which is interesting. So Oscar he's himself through and through. He's just like, he was like already fed up when he had to go into the room. And then Dwight makes some very racist suggestions, like about, or rather racist assumptions. Yep. And he's like, and I'm done with this. And that's not the first time that Oscar is going to have to say that I am done with this thing. Like, he has to walk out of the office multiple times because it seems to be like the target of so much stuff that's like, gross.
Well, his reactions are always the same, because it's like every time someone comes up to him, it's always the same stereotype idea of who he is that he's getting like bombarded with, that then he has to kind of just get like shake his head and try and get through this barrage of stereotypes that seem to constantly be coming at him. But it's kind of funny. Can I say that?
No. I think it is. Like, I think that's part of it. And, you know, it's funny, because I think what makes it funny is the fact that he just sort of, he's with us in the sense that mm-hmm. we all just expect this from these people. And so it's just like, oh, brother, you know, if he had gotten upset, like super angry and was incredibly offended by it, I think that would be a whole different kind of story. But the fact that he's just sort of like, and now's my time, like he's used to this. It's his cue to go. It's his cue to walk away.
We do see him getting upset, which I think is good, because I think even later on in future episodes, he does have a blow up moment and he can't take it anymore. And that is a good thing. Like, it's a really good thing that we get to see that from Oscar. But it's also like, you know, kind of talking about who he is, and you kind of like see that building. And this is just another one of those building blocks where it's kind of building on his frustration of what's going on. And we see all the other characters who are making a lot of these assumptions eventually learning from them. So that's a good thing too.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, the growth of the characters over time is so, mm-hmm. it's so important to pay attention to that. I think as folks who are watching this show for the first time, or maybe sort of you watched it in bits and pieces and you're trying to like get a full understanding of the show. These episodes, as we go on, are right now we're sort of in character defining moments for the mm-hmm. Sort of tertiary characters. But eventually we're going to come to a place where we start to see all of the characters' growth. And it's not just the main ones of like Michael, Dwight, Jim, Pam. Mm-hmm. And that's the extent of it. I do want to talk about something because, Tiff, this may surprise you. And maybe the listeners out there, because y'all know how I'm usually kind of down on Jim and Pam's relationship. It's just that I'm usually like, this is kind of boring. This is an episode where that song comes on, where then I saw their faces and uh-huh. now I'm a believer in the Jim and Pam relationship because, I can remember, in the past, watching this episode and actually identifying with what goes on here, because we see Jim. So they both are talking. They both say the same thing at the same time. If anyone, you know, like you, if you haven't watched the episode, and she ends up jinxing him, and there aren't any Cokes for him to buy, and so he has to be quiet until he gets her a Coke. So the whole rest of the episode is sort of these sight gags and things like that, where we see Michael, we see Jim not being able to speak.
Jinx, buy me a Coke.
Oh.
No talking. Jim is not allowed to talk until after he buys me a Coke. Those are the rules of Jinx, and they are unflinchingly rigid.
But at the end of the episode, Jim is like talking about Michael and Dwight. And I know I'm jumping around a little bit, but the topic, he's talking about how he doesn't understand why Dwight bends over backwards for Michael. He's not getting mm-hmm. anything out of the relationship. But the whole time the producers are showing you, like, that is exactly what Jim was doing this whole episode. And he's not really getting anything out of the relationship, other than like this person that he very much cares about, but she's engaged. Like
It's a friendship, but there's also so many feelings in there. It's like, where is it? It's going nowhere, really.
Exactly. And he still tries. And mm-hmm. like I said, when I sort of first watched this episode, I was in the midst of something like that. But this was like the realization moment. And it's like, oh my gosh, that is a one-sided thing. And you don't realize it. You don't see it because you're in it and you just are like so devoted to this person that makes you happy and you want to make them happy. And so you do these things. And I think if Jim was just an ounce more empathetic, then he would understand where that comes from with Dwight. Like when you genuinely care about somebody, then you will do whatever for them. And sometimes you'll do whatever for them and they will take advantage of that. And that's what mm-hmm. Michael is doing with Dwight. And I don't think Pam's taking advantage of Jim necessarily, but it's the same thing where it's relatively one-sided in terms of sort of action. I don't think it's one-sided in feelings at all, but in terms mm-hmm. of action, it's one-sided.
Yeah, because we see that really heavy moment between them when she's just kind of joking around with him and teasing him essentially for not being able to talk. And then she says, Jim, you can tell me anything, just trying to be like overly dramatic. And the change in his face where it's like it becomes so heavy because it's such a thick phrase of words, because it means so much. There's so much subtext and content in that is reflective of their relationship. And it's like his whole face changes and it's like, no, like he can't tell her everything. And she realizes that too. And her face changes. And again, it's like, we've talked about it in the past, but the silent acting that goes on in this cast is just so great. And this is like a big Jim silent acting episode, like all the way from the funny one that he does in the conference room as like a one up and kind of thing with him and Pam in the conference room where he pretends to do his family drug history thing. He doesn't say anything during the whole thing and it was amazing.
It was
even
so
Pam's
good.
Impressed. But now like with this really emotional moment, it's just it was hard. And Pam even feels it too, you know, like that's why in the end she goes and she buys the drink and she's like, it was weird, you know, and she says it out loud. She addresses the awkwardness and then, you know, kind of glosses over it with, oh, you have to tell me what's going on with Dwight. But still, there's so much heavy stuff going on between them. And we're seeing a really much more animated Pam in this episode, which I really like. And we've been kind of building up to that. And because I think about the Pam in the future, and I think about the Pam in the very, very beginning of like the first season. And sometimes without the analysts, like the really nitty gritty looking at the episodes like we are in this show, for a while I was like, how do we get there? Like, how do we get to that Pam from that Pam? Like, it almost feels like she's acting like two different people.
Uh-huh.
Right? Think about her in like episode, like the some of the final episodes, or not even the final, but yeah. Some of the end seasons and then her in the beginning seasons. And it really does feel like, whoa, is she just acting out of character now? Like, how did this happen? But I'm really paying attention that I'm seeing her progression. I'm seeing her boldness escalate. I'm seeing her personality come through her shyness more and more. And it's a very gradual change. And I really love that. I love that it's not just this giant jump of, oh, now I'm this character after, you know, a time of being the shy one and now I'm not, you know. So I see that, and this is like a transition episode. This one and the previous one are transition episodes for Pam's personality. I'm seeing her become more and more bold and funny and speaking more loudly and projecting more, even in the confessionals to the camera. And it can be a testament to her getting used to having a camera crew there. Because we see her in the beginning, it's all new to everybody. Michael even addresses it. And then now it's like, you know, they've been there for over a year, presumably. And it only just gets more and more comfortable, right? If someone's filming you every single day. So it could be that too.
Something that I don't think that I've done necessarily is keep what you've just said in mind as I'm watching. This idea that there are... the idea that there are... the character changes that take place because of the camera and getting used to that over time and how that plays into the characters and their roles. Because one thing that I did notice in this episode was Michael is talking to Dwight about a very illegal thing, which would be asking Dwight for his urine sample. And he doesn't think to like, turn the microphone down. Like his lapel microphone is still with him. And that is an interesting thing. There are multiple facets to the camera crew being there. And as the characters get used to that, and as they, you know, sort of understand what does need to and doesn't need to change, I find that fascinating. Because later on, when Michael and Holly are hanging out, he does remember the microphone and accidentally turns it up and set it down. But
right. So like he's more conscious of it then, but now he's still
but
not,
now he's not
that conscious of it. Yeah,
exactly. So I'm going to have to, as we're going forward, I think I'm going to pay a little bit more attention to that and seeing how the characters might change. Because if you look at it through that lens of, through that lens, that's a pun, not on purpose though. If you look at it through that lens, it changes the way that one could perceive each of these characters, because you have to wonder, okay, does Kelly play up Kelly because there's a camera there and like she wants to be the next Real Housewives of Scranton?
Yes. Yep.
You know, and
it's like the presence of the camera can excuse or forgive a lot of things. And I think that it's our interpretation. It's like reading Shakespeare, you know, like it. Was that really all intended? Yes, I'm comparing The Office to Shakespeare. just leave it. Because to me it is. Anyway, it's like you can use the presence of the camera to either excuse or forgive certain things or to justify certain things. It's like you could use that that element in it. It's like if it was written in there or not, or intended or not, it's almost like a nice kind of deus ex machina to get out of like weird little incontinuities that happen throughout the episodes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how I like to use it. I'm kind of almost using it as like a literary excuse.
I can dig it. I can dig that for sure. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the plot of this whole thing. Mm-hmm.
I have so many notes from this episode because it's so funny.
It's so good. Ugh.
All the interviews. Oh, wait, I love when Dwight brings in the picture of the marijuana and he starts the interviews, and he already started with Kevin. And I love his description of Kevin. It's like, you know, he was like slow moving, inattentive, dull. And Kevin's like, wait a minute.
It takes him forever. And then he's like, hey.
It's so Kevin. And then Phyllis, when he asks like, what is this, and she's like, marijuana, he's like, how do you know? And she's like, it's labeled. Like, I love that. Like, there's just so much smart little attentive writing over and over and over in this episode. Every single moment is accounted for and precise, and it fits in. Oh, it's just, this episode's so good. I feel like you would think it was a throwaway episode, but then you really start watching it. And I laughed out loud like 6 times.
This is one. So I didn't necessarily consider the fact that so many of the office inspired interactions I have with friends and folks who I know watch The Office actually just come from this one episode. Like, I've had the Dwight and Creed conversation with so many people.
That is Northern Lights Cannabis Indica?
No. It's marijuana.
he's so upset. Disappointed. I love the way Rainn Wilson plays that.
Yes, it's so good. It's so good. And we have the, I think, also hilarious scene with Jim almost convincing Dwight that he's been smoking weed and that the... How much marijuana did you smoke before I came in here?
It's a perfect Jim-Dwight role reversal situation. Yes. Jim so smoothly is able to convince Dwight of sometimes the very opposite thing that he's trying to do. And so I found this a great fact that I copied directly from Dunderpedia because it made me laugh so much. The cast and crew jokes that this episode has... it was probably the most times a television show said the word urine. They said the word urine 16 times.
Oh, my word.
In this episode.
That is another one of the lines that I'm always saying.
It has to be official, and it has to be urine.
It's a really good one. You could apply it to so many situations.
And Meredith has this look on her face like, oh, my goodness. So I guess, Tiff, I'm wondering, last week when you went to that Alicia Keys concert and you had those great aisle seats, was there anyone there with a lip ring who tried to get you to smoke clove cigarettes that may or may not have been just clove cigarettes?
Oh, yeah. She was really insistent. She was kind of trying to deal her cloves.
Deal the cloves. Yeah. And, you know, those were expensive clove cigarettes, I bet.
Yeah. Also, you don't pass around clove cigarettes. So I'm thinking Michael's suspicions might be real.
Yeah. Nobody.
That whole story was a little strange that he told.
My favorite thing is that he thinks that, like, an airplane... And don't at me if you like the window seat, but like in an airplane, the aisle seat is the premium seat. And so he says that he got great aisle seats at the Alicia Keys concert. And it's like, that's not what you want. You want like front row seats is what you want at a concert. And he's like, yeah, I got some great aisle seats. It was a good time. But yeah, I mean, I will say that, you know, back in my day in college, we actually did, because none of us were smokers, but we thought that like around the holidays, like Christmas time and things like that, that clove cigarettes were like a kind of funny thing. And so occasionally we would like all share one clove cigarette and just pass it around.
That's and really weird.
It's very weird.
Who shares a clove cigarette?
Some some weird Midwestern college kids, I guess. But I'm with you there. Like, he definitely, that was like, is not a close cigarette. Unless people, I mean, maybe people put, some stuff into the clove cigarettes like they do with other things. I don't know. But yeah, I get the impression that he may
have smoked
weed.
But it also could have been a clove cigarette. You know what I mean? Like, with Michael, it's always up in the air. He's confusing us as much as he's confusing himself.
Exactly. Yes. Yes, he is. And like getting anxious about it, which is sort of funny because his paranoia and anxiety are like known effects of marijuana. I don't know if they were trying to go for something there, but I like to think that played into it. It's just like this whole episode is like drug scare and drug related.
Misfacts.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Michael tries to have this conference room meeting all about drug facts to kind of display how on into drugs he is and how much he hates them, and he couldn't possibly be drug tested because he hates them the most out of everybody. And it's like the chart he puts up of all the different drugs that he lists, it's so just so much misinformation. And I love Stanley's reaction to the misinformation. I love everyone in the rooms. Like, we get some great Toby situations. We have it's really, really great conference room scene with, again, Michael presenting these facts. Do these facts scare you?
Do you think smoking drugs is cool? Do you think doing alcohol is cool?
There's so much going on in this. And it was like right after Michael then was making all these jokes about how cool it was to do drugs.
Yeah,
and
he was
how
getting onto Dwight.
Such a narc and making fun of Dwight. So we do, speaking of making fun of Dwight, we do have a big kind of bully situation going on, where at first it feels really funny because it's funny to make fun of Dwight because he goes so extreme on things. I mean, he's basically wearing like a costume because of the boots and everything. Like, you can't not look at how he's dressed.
Right.
But he takes himself very, very seriously, and his standards for himself and his beliefs run so deep that in the end, when we find out how he is so destroyed by the idea of having to provide, you know, some clean urine for Michael, who thinks he got high at an Alicia Keys concert, is like absolutely crushing to him. And he feels the need to, like, he can't carry a badge as a lie, and he has to turn in his uniform. And he was just a deputy, which I think they give to kids. I don't even know. But like, you have this two different sides where you're balancing this extreme delusion with this deep passion. And it feels wrong to make fun of or belittle somebody's deep passion. And
exactly
what it comes out to in the end, where like, oh, this really meant something to Dwight. And everyone should have realized that to begin with, but everyone was so involved in the like hoopla of it all that we didn't see it. And then we see this really sad, like this broken Dwight. And it's really, really hard to see. And then, but we see Michael being empathetic in the very end,
yes,
where he then offers Dwight this, I don't know, what would you call it? He offers him not a gift. He offers him kind of this beacon of hope.
There you go.
For
it's sort of like a stepping stone, or I don't know what. Yeah,
it's a gesture.
It's a bandage.
It's kind of like a symbolic gesture of, look, I appreciate you, and your convictions mean something, and they're important, and you should keep them. And so here's this kind of title, which means nothing.
Yes.
Like, this kind of position, this ceremonial position, really, to do security. And we see poor Hank getting the brunt of that.
Yeah, but I love how quickly Michael walks away.
Like, yeah, he's nope. Like, and we're done. He even prepares like the little, you know, oath pledge that he has written out for Hank to read. Like, I think it's all very, very sweet and empathetic and kind to Dwight's feelings. And that's why Dwight's such a confusing character, because we love to laugh at him being the clown, but he isn't trying to make people laugh. So sometimes it feels really mean.
Yeah. I mean, this is, again, I think that a lot of people, the karate episode or taekwondo or whatever it is that Dwight does, like a lot of people weren't too affected by that episode, but I really was when I felt like Jim was sort of bullying Michael or bullying Dwight by taking away his black belt or taking away his belt and mm-hmm. sort of holding it away from him. And I think that this is that same sort of thing because, yes, he can be annoying, Dwight can be, but he's so earnest in everything that he does that it makes it difficult for me at least to fully and completely enjoy all the times that he's being teased. Because it's a different story if you're trying to make people annoyed with you or trying to be purposely aggressive. I guess it's like motivation behind things. And I think that mm-hmm. Dwight has honorable motivations most of the time. And mm-hmm. when it's not honorable, it's just completely earnest, like a child's passion about something. And this is one of those things where like he's just genuinely passionate about being like helping the law and being a law-abiding citizen and wanting to help out. And so to see him have to go against everything he believes in, yeah, I think that anybody could find that sort of upsetting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I watch these episodes. It doesn't stop me from laughing at what's going on. But then like when I'm writing down my notes and I'm really thinking about it, I was like, ooh, that actually wasn't super cool. But just the way Dwight is written and the way it's acted and presented, you don't realize what you're laughing at first. Mm-hmm. And some, like you said, you put in that little clause of most of the time with Dwight, the way he is. I mean, sometimes he's being a jerk, right? And then so the banter between, you know, the prankies and the pranker, you know, it's fun and it's it can get serious, but it's almost like someone has some really strong beliefs in something that it's not wrong, but needs to be challenged. And just to like kind of open up your mind and expand your world a little bit. And the way it's getting challenged in the context of The Office is usually pranks and jokes. And so sometimes it's like breaking those kind of bonds that you would have with something that you thought you were supposed to believe in is a good thing. So it like, you know, will make you a better person. Like we eventually see with Angela how uptight she is about stuff and she gets faced with things and, you know, those notions that she had get broken down and she becomes a better person for it. So like maybe this is also a little bit true with Dwight that he gets so caught up and tense around these like what is right and what is wrong and morality and doing things for people you love, like all the stuff that happened in this episode. Maybe it was good that Dwight saw a little second of what else could happen.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it changes your, it starts to, there's always, it's never one thing or the other. Like there's always all of this gray area and you have to decide what's right for you in life. And now we're getting all philosophical, but you know, like that could be one of those things that it's one of the, it's like, it's a little okay because now you're learning, even though it was a harsh lesson, but I don't know. I don't want to justify a bully, but,
right?
Yeah. It's so complicated. All of a sudden this crazy episode that I laugh so hard at, now I'm all like, what's going on? What's analysis? Like what's happening?
Cause there's, yeah. I mean, that's, again, I think that's what you and I mean, we've talked about it before. It's what we like about the show is that it's not just one thing. And I think what people identified with and why it ran for so long and why it's sort of having another moment in the culture. I am always hearing people talking about The Office and sort of, you know, sharing GIFs and sharing articles and all this stuff about The Office because it has so much flavor and texture mm-hmm. and realness in it that yes. is sort of right underneath. It's like is it creme brulee that has that, like you sort of custard. Heat the top. Yeah. But mm-hmm. it's custard underneath, but it's got like that
caramelized sugar.
Yes, thank you. So you got that caramelized sugar top that is the humor of the show. But once you dig into the creme brulee, like you break through that shell, and underneath is this rich, delicious custard that mm-hmm. is the realness of the show. And so, yeah, The Office is creme brulee.
It's Shakespeare's creme brulee. That's what it is.
Shakespeare's
it totally is.
Creme brulee. Maybe that's going to be our shirt. We'll see.
But I mean, it is. It is so, so real. And everything the characters do, every little touch of everything is just so, it's so real. I love even when Pam buys that Coke for Jim and she like taps it towards him.
Yes.
Like a cat, like a little do-do-do. Yeah, like those little tiny, tiny, silly moments, like little looks, little gestures, like Jim when the Coke was out of the machine and Jim like hits the button like a couple extra times just to make sure, like, oh my gosh.
And the part,
it's just
where
all so real.
There was another part that I didn't notice before. I had looked away at one of my dogs and I looked back, and so I just so happened that my eyes weren't focused on whoever was at the front of the camera, like in the foreground, and I saw Stanley in the background, and he had this blank, half-lidded, almost asleep look on his face while Michael was talking about something stupid. And it's just like, that is so Stanley. That's hilarious. Mm-hmm. Everybody is devoted to their characters of the show, and everybody, like, because I think that there are probably some extras, like in movies, there are some extras who are like, I'm so devoted to my character. I'm literally only going to walk across the street, but I've got my backstory. And mm-hmm. they do these things, but there's no attention paid to them. But I feel like every actor in this show knows that the camera has an opportunity to pick them up, and that it's going to matter when the final cut is done, how they are reacting to the scene and what they are doing in the scene and how their character is. And so everybody's like on point always. And I love that.
Yeah. And I also love when they fail, like when they giggle or something. And they break character. It's so good. One tiny little fact about this episode about breaking character-ish. I did notice this. On Steve Carell's finger, there was a Band-Aid. It was because his finger was injured and it swelled up so much he couldn't get his wedding ring off. So they had to put a Band-Aid over it.
Whoa.
I know. Just throwing that in there. If anyone did notice his Band-Aid, that's what it was. Speaking of how real things are in The Office, I want to give out this week's Dundee.
Ooh, okay.
And I want to call it the Parallel Lives Award. The award goes to Jameson S Corp. That's their name on Instagram, and their names are Jameson and Katie. And they said it was totally okay for me to tell them this story.
Oh, exciting.
So, catching up on something I met. Okay. My coworker was engaged to be married and wanted me to be at their wedding. I told her I was unable to attend because I'd be busy bicycling around England for the 2015 Rugby World Cup. But, he's never watched rugby before and just heard about the tournament. So she was really upset with him. But then he didn't end up going on the trip, and she didn't end up getting married.
Wow.
And then they started dating, and then they got married.
What?
I know. It's exactly the same story. So
he didn't go to Australia.
Yeah. So I thought that was amazing. So I wanted to thank them for proving that one of my most favorite love stories is possible in real life. So thank you so much.
I really feel like that's Tiff just saying, I want to thank them for proving Micah so wrong about
That's all the subtext right there. That's
I have to draw another parallel really quickly yep. though. So for those out, Katie, her name is spelled K-A-T-Y. And in season 1, episode 6, Hot Girl, Amy mm-hmm. Adams' character, the purse girl, her name is Katie, and it's spelled K-A-T-Y as well.
Hey! There you go. So many things.
How fun. Well, congratulations to the two of you. That is adorable and sweet. And maybe it made my heart grow 2 sizes today.
Aww.
I guess it's time to say goodbye, but I do want to mention, we have chosen, as you might remember, the Michael Scott Nickname Contest award winner. And that was for my name, Micaroni and Cheese, mm-hmm. which is incredible. And yep. I love it. So, I just want to thank Hannah Holtman again. Congratulations on getting that nickname. We are still, holding open the doors for Tiff. There is a great one that's out there, but we just want to see if there are possibly any more that'll come up. You will win a Dundee if you do get that. So be sure to be thinking of those possible nicknames that are in the style of good old Michael Scott. And I want to thank you all so, so, so much for listening to the show. If you want to hang out with us, you can do that by following us on Twitter at @tall_beats. You can also subscribe to become a member of the Incomparable Network. And when you do, you're going to get access to bootleg shows from many of the shows on the network. That means they'll go straight from Skype to a feed that you have access to. You're also going to get access to a members only Slack, including a channel called the Conference Room, which is where you'll find Tiff and I hanging out from time to time, and lots of other fun fans chilling and having a great time. So you can check us out in all of those places. And last but not least, I'll just ask that, hey, if you got a little bit of time, and also for the potential possibility of winning a Dundee, go ahead and head into Apple Podcasts and leave a review or a rating. And that helps us out, and it also could mean a Dundee for you. So thank you so much for listening. Tiff, I am just waiting for the most perfect, most brilliant, most hilarious, clever outro from you. Good luck.